Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Steph. Steph was born in the UK and moved to New Zealand at the age of 7. She has been back in the UK since 1989. She graduated in 1994 from the London College of Shiatsu, where she taught for 14 years following graduation. Steph also had a private Shiatsu practice in London for 20 years. In 2002, Steph was invited to gather together a team of health professionals as part of a contemporary hair health concept. She brought complementary medicine into the 21st century and built a team of almost 50 health professionals across two sites. Steph now runs Grays on the Grand, a perfect venue for hanging art, a perfect space for sharing with people food, wine, and a gallery concept overlooking the sea on the south coast of England. So what led to a change? As Steph says, timing, serendipity, and forces converging, and a need to do something different, and a love of the sea, along with a significant birthday, and the thought, if I don't do it now, then when? Exactly. If you don't do it now, then when? So that significant birthday, when was that?
That was November in 2014.
2014, okay. Yeah. There is something about that 4 going into a 5, isn't
yeah.
there? That makes you think, oh, hello.
Yeah.
So time isn't endless then. How did that happen? Yeah. I was 21 the last time I looked. What happened there?
It seemed to have crept up very, very quickly.
It's scary. I mean, what an amazing history, though. I mean, 20 years run it. Tell us more about that, taking complementary medicine in the 21st century. What did that look like? And what did you achieve as a part of that?
Well, the brainchild of Shine in London was Carla Octagon.
Right.
And she was a hairdresser, is still a hairdresser, and had been doing hairdressing since the age of 16, I think. And there was one day when I just woke up in North London having a bad hair day, and I just called my local place, said, book me in with anyone, but book me in today. So I met Carla, and she became my student at the London College of Shiatsu.
Wow.
She graduated from the London College of Shiatsu, and then she had an opportunity with a couple of silent business partners to buy a building on Stoke Newington Church Street. She's a very forceful, driven lady, lots of energy, but somebody did point out to her that she may not have the wherewithal to run every aspect of the business. So that's where I came in. So she approached me to basically set up the health side of the business.
Right.
And that was back in, sort of late 2001, early 2002. And there were four treatment rooms upstairs, a salon downstairs, and on the lower ground floor. And it was, the whole building was gutted, and it was, an architect was brought in, and he did a fabulous job. It was very streamlined, not a very feminine space. It was actually a very sort of androgynous space to walk into. Beautiful. And the treatment rooms upstairs, simple, but tasteful. And then it was my task to populate those rooms with practitioners. So and I always had the long-term view in mind, in that sort of setting. It takes time to recruit the right people.
It does.
Build a team.
Yeah.
And basically, letting the community know that there's this amazing resource on their doorstep.
And it was successful, obviously.
It's still running today.
It's still running today.
Yes.
And
they're in our two sites. So after about 6 years, I had a text on my way back from Australia from Carla saying, oops, I've bought a building. And that's when the second branch was born.
Okay.
After a year of, working with architects and designers, and it was 2,000 square feet. It was an empty shell. So we worked really hard to pull that together. And again, that was a really modern space because it was in a modern build. Whereas the first Shine Holistic was in an old Victorian building. So one, two, across four stories. So lots of stairs inside. Gosh. Which for people needing the osteopath wasn't always ideal. Yeah.
Do you miss that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I dedicated my life to it for the time that I did.
Mm.
And I feel enormously proud of the team that I created. And most of those practitioners are still there. So that feels like an incredible legacy to both Shine and to the local community.
Mm.
And, you know, all of those practitioners had to do a quality control test on me. So
right.
I received many massages, many acupuncture treatments and reflexology and... You know, some practitioners didn't kind of make the grade,
sure.
And the ones that did, I brought them on and nurtured them, and most of them, as I say, they're still there.
That's amazing.
And they've built really, good, loyal client base. So, no, that business is very successful.
Where was the second site?
Newington Green.
Oh, okay, so not that far.
Not that far.
Not far apart.
No.
Brilliant. So what got you into Shiatsu originally?
A curiosity about the links between mind and body and how one impacts on the other and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I'd always been interested in psychology and sort of the psychology of the body and how we somatize things. Mm. And I'd done a lot of dancing in my life. I'd done yoga. And I was looking for a career.
Mm-hmm.
In New Zealand, I did a degree in anthropology.
Gosh.
Down in Wellington.
Gosh.
As
you do.
Anthropology, education, Russian literature, French. You know, it was a mixed bag of a degree. And, of course, quit me for almost nothing. although it did leave me with an openness to experience the world.
Mm.
I never wanted to be an armchair anthropologist, so... Once I graduated from Wellington, Victoria University of Wellington, I did a quick trip down the South Island, which was amazing. Really beautiful, beautiful country, beautiful island. And then I went over to Sydney, where I worked for a couple of years. And that was kind of big city after New Zealand.
Yeah, I bet.
Really big city, and I loved it. That was back in sort of 1987, I guess, 87, 88. 86, 87. And then I had some money in the bank and off I went for a year backpacking around Southeast Asia mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an eye-opener.
I bet.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You know, no study prepares you for the world at large.
Mm-mm. It really doesn't. It's a culture shock, isn't it, when you go to completely different... Mm. You can read about it, you can see it on TV,
yeah.
But nothing prepares you for stepping off that plane and going, whoa!
Yeah.
They countries like that test you on every level, don't they? Mm.
India certainly was very inspirational and awe-inspiring. Mm. And bonkers.
Oh, it's totally bonkers.
Absolutely bonkers.
Brilliantly bonkers.
Mm.
But bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and I remember queuing on several consecutive days trying to get a visa to get into Burma. And I think our plane load, I was traveling alone, but you team up with other travelers. I think we were the penultimate plane load that was allowed in before they stopped issuing visas because it was curfews hit and it was quite dangerous. So that 7-day visa, which normally allows people to hit Rangoon and then travel up and via Mandalay and back round, we couldn't do that because train lines were blown up and we couldn't leave Rangoon. So we got to talk to lots of locals and hear from them life as it was then. So fascinating.
Amazing. Have you been back to Burma since?
No, but I'd love to.
Yeah. It must be a beautiful country. Mm.
And it's a place in transition and lots of political developments recently. So, it's on my list.
Good. Do you miss New Zealand?
Oh, yeah, that's got a special place in my heart.
You were seven when you went there, so you're born here. So what obviously your parents took you to New Zealand. What took them to New Zealand?
Well, that's an interesting question. It was my mother who took us on a boat. And, you know, we had a six-week journey on the Greek liner, the Elenis.
Oh, my gosh. Six weeks. Wow.
And I just thought it was a great big adventure. All of that open sea, you know, the endless ocean, running around the decks for afternoon tea, making sure we could, you know, pick out all our favourite biscuits. I think she needed a change. Her mother had emigrated there, so
really,
so there was a bit of a bit of a pattern, and I'm eternally grateful.
Really.
Because growing up to the west of London versus Auckland, New Zealand, not difficult.
No.
So it's definitely got, it's a soft spot. I have a soft spot.
I've never been to New Zealand or Australia. They are on my list. I wanted to emigrate to New Zealand, actually, when my marriage broke down in the early 1990s. I wanted to, but they didn't want me, Steph.
Oh,
I've never quite recovered from the rejection. I didn't have the right skills or enough money, so they didn't want me. So I ended up staying in the UK. But it's always been up there as somewhere that I've wanted to go to. I think for that, it's a less crowded version of England, is how I imagine New Zealand. You know, it's green, it's lush. It has that beautiful countryside that we have over here in the UK, but with a lot less people.
That's part of the joy of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's immensely lush and the landscape is really special.
Does it prepare you for the rest of the world, though? Because it's such a different way to live. You don't have that. Maybe, and this is, I admit, an assumption on my part, because I've never been, so I don't know. But with such a different way of living and in such a different environment to go from there back to West London, to that kind of cut and thrust of a major Western city, are you fully prepared for life outside of New Zealand?
I think certainly back then, it was a country that people would regard as being a little bit back in the 1950s. You know, it definitely has become more sophisticated.
Right.
Over the last 10, 20 years. And, I mean, I've been away 30 years now from New Zealand, which when I went back in January of this year, 2016, it did slightly horrify me that it was 30 years since I'd left.
Has it changed much?
I think with the technological explosion, of course, that opens up just so many international global pathways.
It does, doesn't it?
That even as a country sort of tipping off, you know, the bottom edge of the world, it's of course more sophisticated than it was. However, the landscape is still there.
Yeah.
The population is still small.
Mm-hmm.
So it still offers quite an idyllic way of life, I think, especially if you want family. If you're passionate about the outdoors life, it's still culturally pretty quiet.
Is it?
I think, especially having lived in London 25 years, you know, it's
a bit like chalk and cheese, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and it has some, you know, wonderful resident artists and musicians, of course. You know, some really talented people. But I, over the years, I think the pull of major city living, of course, has meant a brain drain over the years.
Yeah.
Now, some of those people go and gain experience elsewhere, then they take that experience back.
Back, yeah.
It is pretty quiet.
It's interesting, isn't it? I guess it's what you're used to, because human beings are incredibly adaptable, and we will change and mold ourselves to fit the environment that we find ourselves in. We're incredibly good at doing that. And I noticed that living down here on the South Coast, I absolutely love it. And I still need to have that injection of the complete insanity of London on a regular basis. I couldn't never leave St. Leonard's, you know, just to be here. And I almost emigrated to the States a few years ago. And then I realised that I actually had everything that I needed right where I was. So it's Los Angeles or St. Leonard's, and St. Leonard's won. I love Los Angeles, but St. Leonard's won. And I also realised why I was kind of running away. And I also realised, actually, I love adventure. But I wanted those little bites of adventure and then to come back. Come back to my roots, come back to where I feel I'm really at home. So I need that injection. And we can adapt to those environments. And I was saying before we started the interview, I couldn't be in the corporate world 24/7 again as I used to be. But I like dipping my toe in and coming out. So do you feel that you have got the nice balance now of being able to tip your toe in when you go home? Like you were back for a month in January, you can experience a big open spaces, you can experience how life was, and then you come back to the UK and running your own business, which we'll get on to in a moment, with everything, the madness that is all around of that. And then maybe, do you still go up to London at all?
I do. I think I will second what you've just said. I definitely adore being on the seafront. You know, I live on the seafront. My business is on the seafront. Yeah. So if I needed a fix of seafront, I now have it in bucket loads. Yeah. It is a culture shock, actually, you know, moving away from London after 25 years. And there's lots happening down here, as I'm sure, you know, you would agree. And I definitely need to jump back to the big smoke.
Every now and again.
Every now and again. And I need to go and eat somewhere. You know, there are so many new places just popping up endlessly in London. It renews itself and renews itself constantly. And I want to go and just see what people are doing, what's new and exciting, what's a bit hip, just to feel like I'm still a player in life.
It's important, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, because even though one has had that significant birthday, you know, there are still plenty more significant birthdays to come. So,
absolutely.
While I'm running a business, you know, I still want to feel like I can just extricate myself from that from this business and just go and be fed. Graison Grand is feeding a lot of people. I need to go and get fed.
You need to get fed yourself.
Yeah.
It's true. It's when I get off the train at Charing Cross in London, it's like this heartbeat of London that pulses through you, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I love the complete insanity of it, of everybody on a mission.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody making eye contact with anybody else. And everybody's on a mission and everybody's in a hurry. Yeah. but I love that because I don't have it every day.
Yeah.
And then you come back to Hastings, and as the train gets closer and closer and the vista opens up and you see the green, that's fine now.
It's a relief.
Yeah. So it's lovely that, you know, that change, which I think we all need. It keeps us alive. And there's something about, we were chatting before we started the interview, there's something about that 50 mark and hitting 50. I don't know how it happens, but the older I get, the younger I become. How does that work, do you think?
Well, having not quite run the business for a year, with all of the challenges that has entailed, I have to say I'm probably feeling my age right now. having 14-hour days, on one's feet, it is quite punishing. And I'd always thought, being active and running around rather than sitting at a laptop, which I had been doing in my previous role as a manager. I thought, this is going to be good. It'll get me moving, and that's good. That's healthy. But no, it's a different type of stress to the body. And other people who are on their feet many hours a day will probably relate to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I need to find a way to factor in, swimming again and things that just help the bones and help the body just, you know, maintain its wellness and integration. So, coming back to your question, I think a lot of life comes through the doors at Grays. A lot of different customers bring, host of experiences, host of expertise and education. And the more I get to speak to my customers, the more I realise the richness in that room. The art is wonderful, and meeting lots of artists, meeting lots of musicians. And they abound in St. Leonard's and Hastings.
They do.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. And I'm learning more and more. So my toes are in, and, you know, we're about to celebrate our first year in business, and I want to have a great big knees up for that.
When
so
is that?
It's the Maybank holiday weekend.
Ah, is it the first one?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so it's imminent.
Wow.
And, you know, there'll be some champagne corks flying. And lots of music that weekend.
Fantastic.
So we'll definitely kick up
Fantastic.
Our heels. And, the balloons will be out. And so, yeah, fabulous. But no, I do miss London, of course. And I think I need London more than I need New Zealand. In the sense that... this probably fulfills some of what New Zealand fulfills.
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
You know, the sea views, and it's...
The feeling of space when you live by the sea as well, isn't there? Because
absolutely.
Nobody's going to build on that view.
No.
So there is a feeling that you can stretch out and breathe when you live near the sea, I think. Anywhere in the world, you get that feeling of space that you don't get in a landlocked city.
Yeah. I totally agree. Mm. And I, you know, one of the things I miss is Sunday mornings going down to the flower market, Columbia Road Flower Market, and, you know, scooping up handfuls of flowers and then ducking in somewhere for a delicious lunch and a glass of wine. So I do, you know, there are things like that, little rituals that I miss. And
now we all have those rituals, and we duck into Grays on the Grand for our Sunday brunch. So you're now providing it. So how did that happen? How did you go from being a shiatsu teacher, practitioner, running a complementary health and hair business, to running a wonderful place on the sea with art, music, food and wine? How did that happen?
Oh gosh, there was a whole catalogue of forces that just converged. And I think Grays on Grand, whilst it may not have been at the forefront of my mind, I think it was percolating for a few years. And I'm not always fast to move.
Okay.
So I think I needed a few years to just let something kind of, let a seed take root.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved what I did in London, but I knew I needed to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to challenge myself in new directions. I wanted to be closer to art. And quite frankly, I'd run out of wall space for paintings. So I'd been collecting artwork.
That's a very good reason.
And years ago, I was in a shop called Truffle in an East London street. It's not Borough Market. It's another market in East London. I'll think of the name. And I overheard a conversation with two women in there saying how amazing St. Leonard's was, and there were lots of artists moving down.
Ah.
And, you know, I parked that conversation, and about 8 years later, I got on a train on a winter's day with my camera, and I just emerged at Warrior Square Station. I pounded the pavements. I went back to London at the end of that day with over 100 photographs.
Wow.
And picking up my jaw, because I thought, how did I not come here before? How did I not know about this place with its wonderful architecture and its idiosyncrasies on the seafront. How did I not know about it? And it just got under my skin. And my father passed away in 2008, and I inherited a small legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to make sound financial investments
mm-hmm.
when I had the opportunity, if I had the opportunity. So I ended up buying a flat with my aunt in Hastings.
Oh, right.
And that started, you know, that sort of started, I don't know if I want to call it a love affair with this place, but certainly it got under my skin.
It does do that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really got under my skin. And I started to spend more time down here. So that was definitely part of the process.
Okay.
Inching my way towards turning 50, getting slightly jaded, I would say, in what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Still loving and believing in shiatsu, no question, no shadow of a doubt. But I think getting into a little bit of compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think needing to do something for me,
mm-hmm.
sort of putting myself in the spotlight. You know, Shine was not my baby, it was somebody else's brainchild.
Yeah.
And, you know, hats off to her. And I, you know, I certainly know the role I had in shaping that business.
Mm.
But ultimately, it wasn't my brainchild. Mm. And I think I felt that I had a whole lot more to tap into within myself. Now, if I hadn't done this, I think I would have become a dance teacher, I think. I would have tried to open a dance studio, and I've been doing ballroom and Latin dancing for many years. I competed in ballroom dancing.
Oh my gosh, you just throw that in. Yeah. We'll come back to that one in a minute.
And that is one thing I have to say I really miss, because there is no way I can run this business at this point in time and continue my dance life. I dip into that world when I can, and I love it, and it makes me feel great. But a business is like, it's like having a baby. And I've never wanted children. And this kind of is like having a child.
Your own business is.
It really is.
It really is.
And,
yeah.
Oh my God.
A child that sadly never grows up. It's like having a toddler permanently.
I'm beginning to realize that. And it definitely has its challenges
mm-hmm.
and its rewards and its wonderful moments too.
Absolutely.
So I have unwittingly become a parent. and I have a passion for good wine. Life's too short to drink rubbish wine. And
yes, so it is.
And, you know, in my journeying down to St. Leonard's, I met Christine Shepherd of thecooler.com.
Uh-huh.
And she, I don't know whether you know her, she used to have a business in Norman Road,
mm-hmm.
St. Leonard's. What a great eye. Wonderful furniture, ceramics, glasswork, really beautiful. And I have a Libra ascendant, and we love beauty. So when I saw her shop, I thought, that's the sort of shop I would love to have.
Mm.
She was a big inspiration for me. And I thought, well, St. Leonard's is not a very big place. It's too small a place, in fact, to have two shops like that, in my opinion. But she became a friend. And she knew that Anka and I were looking for some premises, maybe to set up a business together. Anyway, I had a phone call one day from Christine saying, there are some premises coming up for lease, and I think you should go and see them, Steph. And when that was coming from Christine, I knew I needed to go and see it.
Mm.
And I walked into number 16 Grand Parade on a Sunday afternoon. I looked up, looked around, and I had goosebumps.
Mm.
And it was the first time in about 12 years that I thought, now this could take me away from London.
Mm. Wow. Had a powerful impact.
It really did. And I love elegance. And it's an elegant building. And I just knew, it could work. You know, having been coming down here for about 3 years, I thought, the people are here. I know there's a lot of shabbiness and a lot of edginess in this place, but there's a whole lot more than that,
there
too.
There's a lot of heart and soul in this place.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I knew that and I felt it. So that was the beginning of the journey with Grays. And it wasn't without its stresses, because we did get gazumped. We got gazumped.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But it, or, I don't know. I think there were some angels with this project, because never have I felt, or certainly not for a long, long time, had I felt that this was meant to be. And when it's like that, you kind of just have to go with it.
You do. Yeah, there are other forces that kind of take over sometimes, aren't there? And
really?
you're just along for the ride.
Mm.
Yeah,
I really, really felt that. And there were people supporting and encouraging and waxing lyrical and helping and recommending, you know, workmen and all sorts. And it really came together. It came together in such a beautiful way. And because it's on the seafront, you know, it's financially not viable simply to run a gallery. I'm pragmatic enough to know that's not going. Yeah, I'm pragmatic enough to think that running a gallery is simply not enough in this financial global crisis that we're in. And it's such a lovely view. I thought, well, let's give it back to people and create it in such a way that the room is given over for customers to, you know, maximize the view and the light, which is beautiful down here, and offer them lovely wines to drink. And then the food side of it is what was the biggest surprise, really, because it started off a much smaller concept. More modest.
Okay, interesting. Because that's what gets everybody through the door, isn't it?
It does. It does.
Oh my God, how interesting.
And it was through my art connections that we found Ollie.
Is it?
You know, Sally Cold, Denise Franklin,
yeah,
Denise
oh
New,
my gosh,
Charlotte
my gosh.
Smith, you know, and on it went.
She's such a great chef.
Yeah, he's
and
a wonderful chef.
And it's the food
chef
that pulls everybody in.
Yeah.
And they then taste the wine and see the art.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
And actually, having said that, you know, one of the most successful exhibitions I had last year was Christine Wieland from Munich.
Ah.
And, I mean, that exhibition sold really, really
Did
well.
It?
So, you know, these things, these aspects of the business, you know, sometimes you start off with one assumption, and actually, those things aren't borne out necessarily. So it's a massive learning curve and constantly surprising. It keeps you on your twinkle toes.
It does.
And you have sleepless nights, that is for sure, occasionally. And, you know, other days you're just running, you know, helter-skelter, you know, with busyness. So I love it.
And you can tell. You know, every time you go in, you can tell that there's passion there. And that's what attracts people, I think. You know, wherever it is, whether it's an ordinary shop, whether it's a gallery, whether it's a restaurant, a cafe, whatever the environment, the moment you step over the threshold, you immediately know if there's passion there or if there isn't passion there.
Mm.
Straight away.
Yeah.
And it's people will buy people.
Mm.
You know, you are not the only place in Hastings and St. Leonard's selling wine and food with really good music. You're not, but you're always full.
Mm.
Because, you know, in fact, you've got one that is a couple of doors down that has been there for years. But I haven't been in there for years because the staff weren't very nice.
Mm.
And, you know, I thought, actually, I work really hard for my money and I've got a choice of where I spend it.
Mm.
If you're not going to be nice to me, I will choose to spend it somewhere else. And I haven't been back since. They probably have different staff now. Too late. Sorry.
They've lost you.
They've lost me. So it is that passion, isn't it? And it's the people behind the business. I think a really big mistake that people make when they start anything that's very public focused is that they will have other people in to run it. So they'll put the money behind it, but they won't be the face of it. And that is absolutely key.
I agree.
And it's the businesses where the passion to start it, that person is also at the forefront. And that's what makes it. You know, it's whenever we walk in, there's always a big smile, smile of recognition. And even if you don't know people, there's still a big smile. And it's that, it's like a, you know, it's like a magnet. You know, as you're walking past Grey's and you think you're just going for a walk along, see, suddenly you find yourself going in for a hot chocolate. How did that happen? I wasn't planning on that at all. And it is that that magnet. You kind of hook people in and then you just reel them in and keep them. So it is amazing.
It's the hospitality industry. You
know, it is the hospitality industry, absolutely.
If you don't like people, don't go into the hospitality industry. You know, you do need to kind of quite like people. Otherwise, your job is difficult.
But don't you think any business is the hospitality industry? Because you're always dealing with people. Wherever you're working, you're dealing with people, whether it's internally or externally. It's about being hospitable, isn't it? In whatever industry that you're in. But obviously, the hospitality industry is a lot more marked than that, and there ain't no queerer than folk. Oh yeah. Boy, when you're dealing with the general public, you really realise how bonkers we all are. And I should probably, quite a lot of deep breathing has to go on, does it sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and definitely just not letting how one feels about something, you know, pass across your face.
No.
When we close the door sometimes at the end of a long day or at the end of a long busy evening, you know, and you turn that sign, you know, to we are closed, and you pour yourself a nice glass of wine, then you can have a little debrief. But, you know, by and large, we have lovely customers, and for that I'm very thankful.
Do you have lovely customers, or do you just attract people who are attracted to your energy? Because, you know, I think there's a lot of what we give out in the world, we get reflected back to us. So you are simply getting customers who reflect back to you what you give to us.
Oh, well, I feel like you're paying me a compliment.
Well spotted.
Thank you. I am. Well, thank you. I will I will accept that with good grace. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's true, Katie. Yes, I think that there is a lot of truth in that. And it just goes to show that if you are positive with people, it does come back to you. And
it does.
We live in a world of chains, chain shops, chain cafes.
Yeah, we do.
Sadly. And, you know, Grey's is trying to offer something a little bit different, a little bit unique and quirky. Something grown up, something elegant. And I like to have positive interactions in my life. You know, having worked in the shiatsu field, you know, there's a lot of negative energy out there, or I don't want to feel that in my body. You know, I know what it feels like to be stressed, or I you know, we know what we feel like if we feel angry or edgy or upset. And if we live with that too long, it's the stuff of illness.
It is. Well, you put your body into dis-ease, don't you?
Absolutely.
When it's not at ease with itself.
Yeah. I absolutely endorse
it's
that.
So strong.
Yeah.
And we go right back to the beginning. You know, you think of psychosomatic illness, people, I think, get confused with that phrase. But actually, if you break it down, psychosomatic is actually your mental state affecting your physical well-being, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And it's the two are so intrinsically linked.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And I definitely bring my 20 years of shiatsu therapeutic work and working with people quite psychologically. I definitely bring that into this role.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm working with people. I just don't happen to be working with them, you know, on a futon, you know, on a one-to-one basis. You know,
no, this you give is them lovely food and great wine.
Lovely food and wine. It's there's a lot of pleasure at Grays
to
be
had.
It's a different thing, but health and well-being kind of on a in a different way.
Yeah, because there's something about that social connection, isn't there, and social contact, which is so crucial to our emotional well-being, and I don't think people recognize it sufficiently. As well as touch, actually, I think physical touch is also incredibly important because we're starved of that. Yeah. It has a huge impact on us.
Yeah.
But just that connection with people, you know, loneliness is such is such a dangerous thing because it can affect us emotionally, which then will affect us physically.
Absolutely.
So it's just that connection with people, creating a space that is warm and open and friendly where you can connect on that basic human level. Of sharing, and sharing food, of course, again goes back to that basic human.
It's
fundamental.
It's
to
so
our
fundamental
to it share is. Food, isn't it?
It is, and I think I've long had a yen for sort of being around a big table.
Yeah,
and when I lived in London for all of those years, I've never lived in a house. I've only ever been able to afford a flat.
Right.
So I still have my flat in East London. And I never had a very big table, dining table. So I never really had the capacity to have many friends around my table. And when I moved out to St. Leonard's, I bought a flat with a beautiful big living room, which is where we're sitting. And I finally got to have my large table, lovely rosewood table, and it's a lovely space for wining and dining. Now I don't have much time anymore to invite people, but sometimes when I'm at Grays behind the bar and I look across at a sea of people who are around their respective tables, and their tables are full of food and wine glasses, candles in the evening, it is somehow very heartwarming.
Yeah.
So it is something so intrinsic and so fundamental. And yes, sometimes I wish I was at their table, actually. I want to be on that side. But it's been amazing to facilitate that.
Yeah. And to bring people together to share food and to share company. And that social interaction is an incredible gift. It really is. So we're almost at the end. We've gone slightly over 40 minutes, but that's fine. We've had so much to talk about. In one sentence, what's the future hold for you?
My aim is to make Grays more successful, busier, so that I can claw back a bit of work-life balance.
Right.
So that I can do some more dancing.
Ah, great way to end, which leads me brilliantly into, I will have to interview you again to find out all about the dancing, because we've run out of time. Thank you, Steph. That was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you very much, Katie.
This has been Katie Day, and you've been listening to Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.